1480 AM Columbus, W224 EG Madison, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Daria Albinger. President Biden stopped on the tarmac to answer reporters' questions after a rally in Wisconsin and sitting down for an exclusive interview with ABC's George Stephanopoulos. He insisted he's staying in the race, and he pushed back on polling, which shows him falling behind former President Trump.
You've been wrong about everything so far. You were wrong about 2020. You were wrong about 2022. You were going to get wiped out. Remember the red wave. You were wrong about 2023. And you said all the tough races were going to, we won them all but two. So, look, we'll see.
The interview will air in its entirety on ABC TV at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Wisconsin Supreme Court changes course. It says officials can place ballot drop boxes around their communities ahead of this fall's election. Beryl is now a tropical storm, but it is expected to reach hurricane strength again as it makes landfall along the Texas coast this weekend. This is ABC News.
This news report is sponsored by Wisconsin Capital Management, LLC, serving their clients for 40 years. Visit wiscap.com.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. President Biden in Wisconsin today laying to rest any speculation about his plans for the rest of the election campaign.
What's Joe going to do? Is he going to stay in the race? Is he going to drop out? What's he going to do? Well, here's my answer. I am running and going to win again.
Biden spoke to a crowd of about 1,000 people at a school in Madison. The stop has been called perhaps the most important for the president in this campaign. The state Supreme Court issued a ruling this morning that means election clerks in Wisconsin can use ballot drop boxes during the August 13th primaries and the November 5th presidential election. Also today, justices ruled the legislature's Joint Finance Committee overstepped its authority when blocking some of Governor Evers' actions. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
This is news from WMDX Madison. I'm Savannah Tome Olson. Madison police had to break up fights and fireworks at Elver Park last night. They say about 500 people were in the park after 9, lighting off fireworks. Then someone called 911 saying there was a fight. So when authorities responded, some people started setting off those fireworks at officers. Police say there were lots of close calls for the people there, with so many fireworks and so many people in such a small area, but luckily nobody was hurt. Firefighters helped put out some fires, and police helped everyone get out of the parking lot. No arrests were made. Meanwhile, Wanaboom had a record year. Hundreds of families gathered at Rip Park for activities and, of course, fireworks later that evening. They had contingency plans in case of rain or storms, but the only thing they needed to change was a visit from a Black Hawk helicopter. It couldn't land as scheduled because of the weather, but it still did a flyover. Now, Wanaboom organizers will start planning next year's celebration to be even bigger. And that's what you need to know. I'm Savannah Tome Olson. This is WMDX News.
The Brewers head to Dodger Stadium. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Milwaukee Brewers are in L.A. to open a three-game holiday weekend series against the Los Angeles Dodgers tonight. Milwaukee's still in first place with a six-game lead over St. Louis in the NL Central. The Dodgers in first place in the West with a six-and-a-half-game lead over the Padres. Tonight will be the debut of 29-year-old right-hander Aaron Civale, picked up in that trade earlier this week with Tampa Bay, against the Dodgers veteran righty Taylor Glasnow, who played for the Rays and the Pirates. Before that, last night in Denver, the Brewers' bats went cold. They lost 4-3 to the Rockies, who had jumped out to an early 3-0 lead. And although the Rockies are in last place, they managed to split the four-game series with the Brewers. Pat Murphy after the loss.
There was a ton of opportunities tonight, I think, and a couple miscues defensively that cost us, but it's tough to have the intensity every night, but we do keep it close, and you catch me 15 minutes after the game, I'm going to be disappointed.
That's Brewers manager Pat Murphy with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, scattered showers and thunderstorms, otherwise mostly cloudy, a low around 58. For Saturday, partly sunny with a high near 79. For Saturday night, showers and storms, a low near 60. Scattered showers and thunderstorms, some with heavy rain on Sunday, high of 79.
It's 73 at our studios.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matinair on Air with Jane Matinair. Weekdays 11 till noon on the talk you can't ignore. Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX and on the Civic Media app.
Looking for a roundup of the day's important headlines in quick podcast form? Search no more. Find it now on the WMDX website at mad.radio. Your news just for the Madison area. I'm Terry Bell with WMDX News.
Wisconsin Capital Management in Madison is a registered investment advisory firm and has been serving their clients for the past 40 years. The firm is focused on providing investment advisory services to its affiliated mutual funds. Their approach to investment management is designed to provide competitive performance over the entire business cycle. Their clients rely on them to manage their assets through the fluctuations of market cycles, and they strive to outperform over the long term. For information, visit wiscap.com.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up in the show, we'll talk to the Humane Handling Institute about different ways to raise and slaughter our animals. Interesting discussion. Hope you'll join us.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings at 11. Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Yeah, there it is. Friday, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, day after the 4th. TGIBPF. That's all we do. Thank God it's Busted Pencils Friday and Friday after the fireworks. Johnny Lupinacci, let me see. Put up your hands. I want to see all 10 fingers. Okay, good.
All of them there.
Jess, all your fingers are there. All right, so
all good.
None of you good. Nobody.
I mean, no joke, though, because a lot of people do get hurt on the 4th.
I know.
You, listener, weren't hurt or anybody close to you were hurt. You know, like, let's leave the fireworks displays to the professionals and kind of hopefully you enjoyed your 4th and you're still enjoying a little bit of time off. You know, Tim and Johnny here on a Friday, cracking brews and talking the news.
Talking the news.
Pencils is sponsored by Minocqua Brewing Company, who are big-time advocates of public education, are always working hard to build community and make great beer. Oof, the most sued brewery in America, for good reason, too, because they're taking on the right. Minocqua Brewing Company is making Wisconsin great again, one beer at a time. Check out MinocquaBrewingCompany.com to see where you can buy their progressive beer. Tim, what a week.
It is. I mean, you know, we've had lots of conversation, you know, and it's stuck in my mind, though, yesterday. This whole idea of born that way, you know, makes me think of Lady Gaga. But, you know, we were talking more very specifically in this frame, you know, great teaching, where does it come from? And the potential, you know, mythology out there that, hey, great teachers are just born that way. And the reality of going, no, you can actually teach people to be better teachers. And Johnny, what brought us to this conversation was, again, early conversations with Jonathan Gurko with the Association of College and University Educators that are on a 10-year mission now to change the teaching of all college professors to be great, thereby coming forward with the position of going, no, we can teach you to be a better teacher, you know, and we've had the conversations about, you remember that professor that you had at that time, and you were like, boy, they're a horrible teacher. They know a lot. Holy crap, they know a lot, but they were a horrible teacher. Yeah, that was there. And we pointed out historically, lots of faculty, lots of professors, lots of people who teach in college, they haven't had the training to be a teacher. They know a lot of things. And so that idea of born that way might actually start to have some credibility, because if you have an experience of going, wow, I had Dr. So-and-so and they were awesome, and then I had Dr. other so-and-so and they were horrible, it kind of feels like, whoa, how did one get so good? They must have been born that way. Johnny Lupinacci, but we're dispelling that myth.
Well, yeah, Tim, it's kind of a premise, and it's one that I've grappled with for a long time. as I became a teacher educator, because, you know, there are people who come to the profession of teaching who are really, really good at it. And it feels like they're almost good at it naturally. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that for a minute. But then there's also people who, if we are teacher educators, so again, Tim and Johnny, we teach teachers. What is the point of having teacher education if people are already good at this? And in a sense, do I fully believe that someone can learn to be a good teacher? And that's, and what I mean by that is, like, as myself, as a teacher educator, so my students are teachers, early in my career, I'd ask myself, how can I help everyone that comes to my class learn to be a good teacher? And some of the students coming to my class have some skills and in fact, some talent that already kind of predisposes them to the category of being a good teacher, to the assumption that they're a good teacher, because maybe they're really dynamic. Maybe they, you know,
there's a presence.
Well, maybe they have performance talents. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're great storytellers. Maybe they're really gifted at communicating complex things in digestible ways. Maybe there's somebody who, you know, is really great at developing relationships with other people, especially young people. And so those are skills that I think are complementary to being a good teacher. But I really grappled with this, especially early in my career. Was my role simply to help, like, really support those predisposed sort of talents or interests or affinities into their career development? Or was it also to say, hey, maybe I can teach you some of the really important things? And it led me down a path, Tim, of asking myself, well, what constitutes a great teacher? Like, and what I want to bring up is most of our understanding of that, even the professionals,
sure,
the experts in teaching, is, again, back to, you know, yesterday you talked about it, how socialized we are into what education is. And so there's kind of this, you know, I would say favoritism or assumption that an extroverted, high energy, you know, performance, we even had, you know, big popular books like Teach Like Your Hair Is on Fire. Right. I know an inspirational film for me as a young math teacher was, you know, Stand and Deliver. We had Escalante. Got to meet Escalante in my career as a math teacher, and talk real talk about, was that sustainable? The answer, no. So we have these sort of teacher on a pedestal in pop culture and in media. And in fact, all of our experiences with a good teacher generally, for the most part, we're in a particular, you know, lack of diversity around that kind of teacher. We can have teachers who are really quiet. We can have teachers who are, you know, not high energy, but very calming. We can have, there are different ways that we can bring our presence and our sort of attributes to the classroom and be a great teacher. So I really struggled with this, I'll be honest, for several years in the beginning of teaching teachers. I was like, man, how do we teach people? Because the really good teachers seem to already show up, showing signs of the kinds of things we assume are characteristics or skill sets of a good teacher. Highly organized, right? Likes to keep things color-coded, decorates the bulletin boards really well. These are all things that are important, but don't necessarily have to be already existing to be a good teacher. I really learned through my students, because even though I acted it out, like, hey, everybody's going to learn to be a good teacher, I don't know that deep down in my heart I believed it, until I saw in my own eyes different ways that people were effectively learning to be good teachers. And that didn't mean they were assimilating to that one personality type. So I think it's really important, and I ask it all the time, because yesterday we were talking about faculty learning to be better teachers. So we know that these people are highly capable, like forerunners. They're at the forefront of their career, their niche, their area of industry. They have either a high level of education or industry excellence, right? Mm-hmm. And we want those to be the teachers for the future folks who go into those career paths, or to be inspired by those. Even if I'm not going into fashion design, and maybe as an undergrad, I take a course in fashion design, I want to be able to say, my teacher They were awesome.
They were inspiring. Awesome.
It might not be my thing, but I learned some stuff, and it was just great to be around someone who's a leader in their field.
Right.
So
think about that, though, just for a second. You know, how many faculty, and we have the ability to make this kind of comparison. You know, you took other classes from, you know, philosophy professors, from biology professors. I did, too. And some of them were awesome. They really were. They were great, and they weren't coming out of our field, teacher education. I think a lot of my education professors were awesome. They truly were awesome.
It's the same thing everywhere. I also have been in classrooms, I could say, where I'm like, this person definitely knows their stuff, and I'm definitely learning the stuff they have. However, not maybe the best teacher. And I think it's okay to have different kinds of teachers, because someone sitting next to me might have been like, man, I love the way that this professor teaches, because we all learn differently. The point I'm coming back to on this question, and I ask it of myself often and of people I work with, if we believe that people can learn to be good teachers, then are we supporting that development, or are we resting on the assumption? Because no one says, oh yeah, I think everybody's born a good teacher. But yet our actions, and especially where we put our money in support, doesn't always align with that we believe people can become great teachers. Say, for example, administration at a university. You say like, hey, do you believe you hired and you have the four thinkers in the fields that you hired? You hired experts to teach your students. They should answer yes. All right, do you expect them to be great teachers? Now, if they don't pause for a second, then they're a little bit delusional. All right, so, but they probably will say yes. But they also understand, and Tim, you and I and Jonathan, you know, last week was talking about this, but, you know, we also understand it's not their fault. Remember, the world's leading expert on molecular biology or plastics coatings, right? Mm-hmm. Probably has spent a lot of time and brain energy and effort in being the world's leading expert as a learner and as somebody, and as innovator and a thought leader in that field. That means just a little bit of space, maybe a little bit of space, probably by their own experience, was forming how they become a teacher. So if I believe that I want to hire the best people to teach my students at a university, college, or any program, even in professional development settings. So even if you work at a company out there, you know, Amazon hires trainers all the time, and they hire people who are good at that. I want to come back to this, Tim. If I believe that they are not born with these skills, right? Like if I need a big guy under the basket and I'm a basketball team, all right, I kind of need them to be 7 foot tall. You know, that's a prerequisite.
Not going to happen for me, man.
Right. But we'll in just teaching, stretch ya. Yeah. In teaching, though, I believe that, hey, this person has the content area. Do they have the skills necessary to be a great teacher? And if they don't yet, am I committed to them getting that? And if I am, then remember, commitment without currency is counterfeit, right? And so if I don't commit to that with time, recognition, and money and compensation, right? Because it costs money to invest in their education. So it's really about, do we believe that? And if we don't believe that everyone is born a good teacher, then we believe we're hiring experts who need to become good teachers. And that second part, the latter, requires that we invest in it. So I always ask that question. I wanted to bring it back up because if you believe people can learn to be good teachers, then every student out there deserves one. And that means those of us in the decision-making position to support becoming great teachers have some work to do. Busted pencils. Yay. When we come back, let's keep rocking with this, Tim.
Mad Radio WMDX, Madison's home for the John and Gordy Show.
Gordy here from the Mad Radio Morning Show. When you text us at Civic Media, our text line is sponsored by Rocket Industrial in Madison, chosen by 80% of Fortune 500 manufacturers in the United States that want to package with less. RocketIndustrial.com.
You know Ignite Glass and Gifts' three locations in Madison, but you can also shop igniteglassandgifts.com. You'll find grinders, lighters, collectibles, hand-blown glass water pipes, artistically designed jewelry, and plenty of other items delivered straight to your door or to family and friends. Madison's favorite for glass, gifts, and vape, Ignite Glass and Gifts, Monona Drive, Williamson Street, and Odana Road. Plus, igniteglassandgifts.com.
Looking for a roundup of the day's important headlines in quick podcast form? Search no more. Find it now on the WMDX website at mad.radio. Your news just for the Madison area. I'm Terry Bell with WMDX News.
You're listening to Mad Radio, WMDX, Madison's home for Matinair on Air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Oh, welcome back. Essential fully leaded education talk. Oof. Tim, are you born a good teacher or do you learn to be a good teacher? And I think both of us agree the latter. We all learn to be good teachers. However, we talked about it yesterday's show. I mean, I was just talking about it in the last segment. We're socialized into a particular understanding of what good teaching looks like, and it's not the only way. Or maybe even the way to do great teaching. And we have lots of diverse examples of different folks out there who teach differently and really well. But we kind of landed on this point of like, so if we all believe that you can become a better teacher, like you can learn to teach. It's something that isn't sort of like height, like something that, you know, it's kind of set for us. Then what do we do to teach our teachers? And you and I work with teacher education. So it's kind of it's logical. Like
that's what we do.
Right. They're going to school to learn to be teachers. But I love this aspect of education that I think is also pre-K 12 through higher ed. What about once you're kind of in your career track? Like what about your continued learning? What about being a learner leading learners? Oh. What happens like when you're in that context, you're in that new identity, that new role, you're not necessarily a student anymore, although we're always students of life and ongoing learning. But really, what's expected of us, especially like both of us, Tim, as professors, like we work in colleges and universities and we teach people who come to our classes and we work with other educators in that capacity. What's expected of us as learners, leading learners? How do we continue to keep our craft sharp? How do we continue to learn how to teach future generations of students? Right, who may learn differently than the ones that we maybe took some time to study. So how do we stay fresh? How do we stay effective? How do we stay teaching well? And you brought up some really good opportunities for folks listening who thought about like, hey, I want to do that. Well, there's lots of ways. And I know on my campus, we have a teaching academy. We have a center for teaching and learning, and there are supports. But I'll say like too many of the stories out there, while these exist, commitment without currency is counterfeit.
There you go.
It often exists on shoestring budgets with people spread really thin. And Jonathan Gerko, our guest last week, and you know, we'll have him back because he's just a phenomenal guy and he's really, really doing some awesome work around this. And we believe this to be important, Tim. But I really think about this. He pointed out the reality is that if you're a professor, spent on your research, your expert area, you know, it translates to increase in pay and career advancement. Time spent on your teaching is shown to contribute to a decrease in pay and kind of a stalling out in what we'd call career advancement. So it falls under this sort of altruism where the people who are really great educators out there in higher ed often have to sort of reconcile. So there's a little humility with the ego. They often have to reconcile like, hey, I'm not trying to be in that race. I don't need to be the best and the foremost thinker on plastic coatings. Now I'm interested in teaching the next generation. So, but I don't believe that. I think we should be able to hold both true. We should be able to be supported in being both foremost thought leaders and supported in developing good teaching. So that's kind of where I'm at in this, like getting into the nuances of it. So we could say it's important and we could talk about it, but it needs to be supported. I'm wondering, what are your thoughts on that?
No, I think you're right. Boy, you got me going on lots of different tangents that I could jump off on there. And I'll just hit one. I do think, though, institutions that, quote, say research is their number one issue, that's okay. And in fact, people who then really make their career out of being an awesome researcher, and that teaching isn't as a priority, I mean, that's the type of institution that it is, and that's okay. Institutions that say, though, teaching is a priority, particularly, and I know we're saying all of them should be saying that, but there are institutions that say teaching. And I gave my example yesterday of being at a research institution, but at a campus, a branch campus, that said teaching mattered. And in fact, you could tell by saying my time was allocated to teaching four classes. And so I don't know if that's currency. It was totally a workload, though. But how then at a teaching institution do they value that too? And Johnny, I think I agree with you on there too, where I've seen way too many even teaching institutions not put the currency forward to actually professionally develop everybody. There was this kind of a pressure on people to be good teachers, but the ability to get better at it, boy, you know, that's where there it came up short. And so this is where, now that we talk about, you know, Jonathan Gurko and the Association of College and University Educators, now in their 10th year, any institution who values teaching and knows that there's a place for great teaching, you can have your faculty get better by doing this, because there is a place and you can put some currency towards AQ and towards your teaching and learning center. But man, there's just a lot that goes into learning to be great teachers. I want to hit one other point, though, too, Johnny. You talk about a diversity of good teaching, too, right? The Gregorius, you know, great storyteller has a place because lots of students learn from that type of person. There are other students who shut down, and you've got the quiet contemplative, somebody who can be very methodical in helping you. There's a place for that. We can teach people too. Like I'm going to say I probably came down in the more storytelling over the top approach as being that's who I am and I'm very comfortable with it.
Nah, you're must and be I, joking.
It must be. I thought Jess was going to say, but and I had a lot to learn though on how to calm down, work individually with students, and I did have people teach me how to do that. And you know where I wasn't great, and I'm still not that great at it, but I learned to be better. Was organizing, color coding, and keeping things in a row that they could be easily grabbed upon. Because, you know, left to my own devices, by the end of the day, I'd have a pile of crap everywhere and I wouldn't have it. And I had to learn how to be better at keeping myself organized so that I could keep the flow going. And I did get a faculty member when I was learning to be a teacher who really put it on me to get better at that. And she showed me how, and I did get better at that. So yeah, you can get better. That's my thoughts on that, Johnny.
Well, yeah. And I love it, Tim, because we need to have a diversity of skill sets and personalities and ways that our students can connect across the different folks that teach them. Right. We all can't be everybody. And I think that's really important. And so you're putting together a roster of really great teachers. You need them to be different because the students are going to experience it in different ways. And it sort of complements the whole educational experience they have. I love that you shared how you learned some ways to be a good teacher. You know, I'd like to think about as we come back, you know, how do we just help support that? It's also about making mistakes. We're also saying here, we're not putting this on college professors out there saying, you're not good teachers, you shouldn't be teaching. We're actually saying, hey, how do we make sure that you're invested in, that we help create support and structure around you becoming a really great teacher and maintaining your status as a thought leader? Hey, it's always great to bust pencils. Tim, when we get back, let's jump into some news topics. I mean, it's Friday.
There we go.
This is Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Police say they want people to keep looking for Elijah Vu. They say volunteers are one of the key pieces to their investigation. Elijah hasn't been seen since February after spending a few days with his mother's boyfriend. Investigators say the case is at a standstill. 988 has been the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline number for 2 years, but people in Wisconsin who call only get help 77% of the time. Advocates say helpline operators could be better trained.
988 is a good overall resource for individuals. However, we find that people are frequently put in a position where they have to navigate those calls differently because if they come up with a trigger word, it could end up triggering a wellness check.
Abigail Spangers runs a local helpline in La Crosse. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Here's what you need to know closer to home.
This is news from WMDX Madison. I'm Savannah Tome Olson. We have new information in that murder in Columbus. Police say it all started with a fight. At a press conference, the Columbus police chief announced that the victim's name is Jose De Jesus Fuentes Hernandez. He was 42. Authorities believe 22-year-old Jonathan Javier Luna shot him. Police started searching for Luna, and they ended up finding him at a motel on the east side of Madison. The SWAT team helped apprehend him. Luna is now in the Columbia County Jail, tentatively charged with first-degree intentional homicide. Meanwhile, it's the last weekend of Summerfest. Carly Rae Jepsen, Lil Uzi Vert, Maroon 5, Lil Yachty, The Wallflowers, Neon Trees, and Sister Hazel are all there this weekend. This was the first time in 5 years Summerfest fell on the 4th. Tomorrow is the final day of the three-weekend festival. They switched to this format during the pandemic. Known as the world's largest music festival, last year more than 620,000 people came to Summerfest. And that's what you need to know. I'm Savannah Tome Olson. This is WMDX News.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. The 4th of July typically means a big weekend at the summer box office. This year should not disappoint. Opening this weekend is Disney Pixar's Despicable Me 4, which is expected to be the film that finally knocks off Inside Out 2 from the top spot. The most recent installment is pulling a not-quite-fresh rating on Rotten Tomatoes, but the franchise has enough street cred with audiences to put the butts in the seats. Despicable Me 4 stars Steve Carell, Kristen Wiig, and Miranda Cosgrove. Another highly anticipated opening is Maxine, a film about a young, aspiring actress in 1980s Hollywood that gets drawn into the world of adult films, all while a serial killer haunts the LA streets. If you want to watch a moving picture from the comfort of your own home, Eddie Murphy stars in Beverly Hills Cop, Axel F., which is now available to stream on Netflix. The film is receiving a fresh rating from Rotten Tomatoes and has some of the same old cast members, including Judge Reinhold and John Ashton, and has added a fresh face in Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Have fun at the movies. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, scattered showers and thunderstorms, otherwise mostly cloudy, a low around 58. For Saturday, partly sunny with a high near 79. For Saturday night, showers and storms, a low near 60. Scattered showers and thunderstorms, some with heavy rain on Sunday, high of 79.
It's 73 at our studios.
Tons of glass artists share the same passion for eye-catching art as Ignite Glass and Gifts, so we're showcasing their work alongside our talented local artists and our in-house Ignite artists. The latest techniques, the hottest colors, and mind-blowing designs are here for you to enjoy. Madison's favorite for glass, gifts, and vape, Ignite Glass and Gifts. Monona Drive, Williamson Street, and Odana Road. Plus, IgniteGlassandGifts.com. Do your eyes a favor and see this stuff.
There was a time when barbecue was perfect. A strong, reliable flavor that could be counted on. But then big manufacturers decided that barbecue needed to be zesty or spicy or sweeter or whatever. If you miss the good old days of great tasting barbecue, we'd like to introduce you to Grandpa's Barbecue. Made in small batches from Grandpa's original recipe. Buy yours online today at grandpasbarbecueshop.com.
Crude and Dom.
Tune in Monday for a very special Devils Advocates radio show, the Joe Biden Hangover from Madison, and Dom joins us. Tune in Monday.
The Devils Advocates, weekdays 3 to 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Ah, there it is. Busted Pencils Friday. Dance music. Educated educators talking education. Yeah, we are. TGIBPF. Thank goodness, or thank God, it's Busted Pencils Friday. And Johnny, man, great stuff on whether we learn to be a better teacher or whether we're born that way. And, you know, great conversation, because the reality is that we can all really get better. And there are lots of ways to be a great teacher. And yeah, there are characteristics that make certain people in certain situations better, but the diversity of styles is great. But we can teach you how to be better. And we're going to continue to focus on that, you know, and again, love the references to AQ, the Association of College and University Educators. But thank God it's Friday. However, Johnny, trending education news, got to bring this up. For me, you know, this is a spot that kind of gets me going, and here we are.
Grinds your gears.
Grinds my gears, man. This stuff bothers me a lot, you know, and so we started off a couple, you know, end of what, I forget, a couple Fridays ago, Louisiana decided, along with that flag that's required to be in every classroom in public school, the Ten Commandments are now going to be required to be displayed in every classroom across the state of Louisiana. You know, what is that a signal of? At that time, they were trying to say, well, not even, and now, well, it's a historical document that's connected to the history of America. That's why it's going up. It goes right up there with the Declaration of Independence, you know, the Ten Commandments, because everybody knows Ben Franklin was carrying around two big stone tablets with him when he put up the kite and discovered electricity. No, that didn't happen. But then we add some more to it. Our friend, the state superintendent from Oklahoma, just decreed that every classroom in Oklahoma, not to be outdone by Louisiana, every classroom now needs a Bible in the classroom. And again, reasoning and rationale, historic document, Johnny, absolutely foundational and related to the founding of America. And now out of Texas, here we go too. There's a full K-12 curriculum in the state of Texas that right now has blatant Christian overtones and a lot of controversy. And we're now bringing this up. And this is, you know, to me, people are like, Tim, what's the problem? What's wrong with religion? Nothing, nothing. However, is this an issue here? And there's lots of complexity here. Separation of church and state in our public schools, separation in church and state. I think that's an issue, Johnny Lupinacci. I don't know, you know, how do we do that? I would start there at that and put the fundamental question. Ten Commandments, Bible, Jesus references in the curriculum. Is this a violation of church and state? I'm going to put that to you, Dr. Lupinacci.
If we're good, you can make it, it's more complicated than just an either or for me. But I think it's also a no-brainer. It's like, I know why this is happening. I think there's a rise in Christian nationalism, which is different than just saying like, hey, I'm respectful and I really, really acknowledge and want there to be a diversity of religions out there, because all human beings, all cultures have mythopoetic narratives that kind of help shape how they understand the world, right? And so, and we can believe really wholeheartedly in those. And I think that our public schools ought to be spaces where we learn to hold space for others to think differently than we do, right? To have some difference. Well, you know what, the bell rang. And as true as the bell rings, that means that there's a democracy in action. Democracy in action, Tim. I mean, this is what we're getting at. And just
there we are.
The school bell for that regular segment. Democracy in action. This is democracy in action, is navigating, right? Multiple perspectives and being able to have conversations that hold space for difference. Diversity is a core democratic value. It's not just about cultural diversity. It is also, as a part of that, in every way, about the beliefs that we have rights to as humans. That's a human right. Rights to the belief systems. However, another core democratic value is to honor others' lives and the freedoms that one another have, liberty, right? And so one's religious beliefs or cultural beliefs or preferences in any way cannot dominate or take space at the cost of another. And so this, I come into that and, you know, democracy in action, us having this conversation about the role of, you know, a dominant religious belief in the classroom, one way. And this is where I'm going to say it's kind of absurd. And this is not me being anti-Christian, okay? Because I'm holding space here for Christianity. I think there's space in our schools for Islam. I think there's space in our schools for Judaism. There's space in our schools for atheism. There's, you know, and I could keep going and keep going with different belief systems. However, there are fundamentalists in every religion and every world religion. Right. And those fundamentalists start to kind of take it to my beliefs are the one right way. And you should have to adhere to my beliefs. That's out of bounds. That is not democracy. You can believe it, but you can't have your way. Right. So liberty has some bounds on it. Right. No one's going to tell you you can't believe that, but it can't come at the harm or the cost of others or that diversity. And so we get on this, and I do believe this is a political effort from Christian nationalists.
Thank you.
A particular moment where this country is under threat of a fascist state that has gained momentum through recruitment of Christian nationalists, right? Because there are a lot of people who are like, hey, well, I'm Christian. That would be great. I think they're great values, and everybody should have them. Hold on. You can believe that, but we can't impose them. And in fact, can we coexist and can we explore the differences and the similarities in these? So I always think we get this wrong, especially on the left, that we like, we get pulled into a battle where we're like separation of church and state, you know, no religious stuff in schools. It's like, well, hold on.
Right.
Because let's not be unrealistic.
No,
there are religious influences all over, but we need to be more open-minded and broad about those. And that don't come at the cost of your cultures or your groups or your individual beliefs.
I see this, man. I don't think it's the left. Maybe certain people on the left blow this out of proportion, but I really do. There's an intentionality, and Johnny, you admitted to it, that the Christian nationalism, this isn't about making the study of Christianity something that students can engage in, because there is no, you know, study of Hinduism. There is no study of Buddhism. There is no study. There are no foundational documents there. And when you hear places like Louisiana, Oklahoma, and Texas using their historical documents for America's founding, that is bull. That is nonsense, because that is actually trying to get certain people to believe, you know, and say, now, is it fact that the founders of this country were largely Christians in some way, shape, or form? Yes. Did they have teachings and learnings throughout their lives that influenced them the way they thought about democracy and freedom? Probably. Could you trace it back to things they learned when they went to church as kids and learned things they practiced? Maybe. But to say that the group of founders who we call, you know, the founding fathers sat around and decided, you know what, here's our founding document. It's going to be based on the Bible. That just didn't happen. It didn't exist. There is no truth to that story. That is an imposition of current people saying, but I want our country to have been based on Judeo-Christian values, and I'm going to now create that factual story today and put it forth as history. And that is nonsense, because that is what you call heritage. It sounds historical, It sounds like it might be based on some evidence, but the reality is when you look at it, it's really a cultural story that puts you in the driver's seat, that tends to put you above and put everyone else below. And that's what I see there. This is indoctrination. This is trying to tell those of you who aren't Christian nationalists, either get on board because this is the way we're going, or you're not welcome here. And yeah, that is not a public school value. That is not a democratic value.
Well, I agree with you. It's not democratic value. I also will say historically it has been a public school imposition. And that's why I'm like, okay, if we're talking about the religious influence on education, and especially like Christian fundamental, you know, beliefs imposed on curriculum, I think, you know, it does make sense. It is important to talk about if we are learning about the genocide on this continent.
Yes.
If we're talking about colonization and the, you know, even if we're looking at like the Revolutionary War or like the independence, right? It's the day after the 4th of July.
Yeah.
Right. The push to have some religious freedom, right? Is at the heritage of this and the history of the foundation of this country. Now, I think to separate it out a little bit, there are great folks in Louisiana. There are amazing teachers in Louisiana. There are great folks in Texas. There are amazing teachers in Texas. There are great folks in Oklahoma. There are amazing teachers in Oklahoma. There are also political voices who, exactly how you're explaining it, are rallying Christian nationalists through the promise of, we are going to build a country that has one religion. And I think that's anti-democratic. That is not a democracy, right? That is a fundamentalist state. And if we want a fundamentalist state, which those political agents
they do, and their
base wants, this is the logical argument. I think it's important we talk about it, but it's also really important to democracy that we resist it. And we don't resist it by saying your beliefs are wrong or bad. We just say there are some limits to how much space you can take up. So I'm going to link it back. This is a country. This is our country's grappling with patriarchy, with white supremacy, with, you know, Christian nationalism. The game we're all playing, the game of life, is about competing for the most space, and that's simply a problematic game for democracy. It is about coexisting. It is about sharing space. It is about collaborating and celebrating our differences in healthy ways. Right. And so I cringe when I hear those pundits or those political agents of Christian nationalism saying, like, there's going to be 10 commandments in every classroom because those are historical documents. It's like, okay, hold on, back up. Learning about Moses? Because then all awesome. So are we having like also a version of Moses from the Torah? Are we talking about the history of, you know, of other places? Are, you know, and it branches into like world religions,
sure,
diverse cultures, world geography. A little cough today. It's my after 4th of July breath. But, you know, Tim, I get into that and I think, no, I have to back up. I'm making this more complicated than it needs to be, because I agree with you. What we're responding to, and this is where I sometimes call it like, hey, let's not fall into the dog whistles that are blown for the left to react to. We need to actually respond to this.
Right.
But I do believe as part of a democracy, it is an ongoing debate that we're going to have, because religion is part of all people's lives. Even if your religion is non-religion, you have a mythopoetic narrative influence on the origins of where you come from, the actions, a rationale for the actions and the way that you make moral decisions.
But so you said something key. You said something key there, though. The debate. And that is what you hear being pushed out is there's no debate. Comparative religions? No. In fact, we're going to get back to. So we still got some time. We're going to come back. We're going to break this down a little bit more, because if we were really teaching religions, what might that look like? And I think that can exist in a democracy. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Yeah. Religion in democracy, they work together. We're going to tell you how.
She's 2,000 miles. You're listening to Mad Radio WMDX, Madison's home for the Todd Allball Show.
My wife and I both, we ended up mildly sick for a few months, and the nasal congestion was probably the worst part. I had like a post-nasal drip, just super congested all the time. We were taking everything we possibly could, but nothing really worked.
Kyrie was miserable until a friend recommended Navage. Navage offers immediate drug-free congestion relief, flushing your nasal passages with refreshing saline and sucking out mucus, germs, and other airborne irritants. Don't live in misery this cold season. Use Navage so you can breathe easier, sleep better, and feel your best right away.
The biggest thing Navage has done has completely cleaned out my nasal passages. It was from the first use. I was able to just clear out anything that was stopping me from breathing correctly. Navage helps me clear the way, literally clear the way, for me to operate better in the rest of my life.
Experience the Navage difference yourself. Navage is available at Navage.com or at Walmart, Walgreens, CVS, and Rite Aid. Navage, N-A-V-A-G-E.
Mad Radio 92.7 FM, home of the John and Gordy Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
There it is. Yeah. Last segment, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Heck of a week. July 4th week, and here we are on the Friday. TGIF or TGIBPF. Thank God it's Busted Pencils Friday. Sometimes I get a little confused, though. Johnny, what a show, though, man. Can you be born a teacher? Well, you can learn it and you can be born with it. And here we are, though, now to, you know, transitioning into the news and the big push in three states, Louisiana, Oklahoma, Texas, to what feels like a real Christian nationalism influence on the public school curriculum. And, you know, I was kind of talking about this, like it bothers me. And I'm not saying it doesn't bother you, but, you know, in fact, though, yeah, I took you and I kind of hijacked you by a word you used and kind of created a either or situation. So
it's okay, help me. I think we're often limited by the language that we're in and the culture that we're in, which always points this towards debate. And I think I even misspoke when I said we should be debating these. And I don't know if I said that or not in the third segment, but. You know, I want to come back around to correct that and say, I think debate is the wrong word, but it's too common that when we have differences, we debate them and the outcome should be, and even though that may not be the actual like dictionary, right? Definition of debate, but the outcome or the practice is that we have to argue our point of view as the right one. And there's a winner, right? And there's a loser. Mm-hmm. And what I want to come back to is what we ought to be doing. And this is, I think, a bedrock of democracy. And what ought to be of public school. So it doesn't grind my gears as much that this comes up because I'm like, okay, let's have this discussion because we should be talking about how we all coexist with our diverse belief systems. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways that I come at that always when I'm, you know, teaching teachers, especially when I'm talking about social studies and having taught and learned in places where religion was banned, and having had, you know, friends and colleagues who are citizens of a religious fundamentalist state in our world, we know that you can ban something and it still exists.
Yeah, right. Right?
So this is one of those things that say like we land on democracy as a way of organizing our capacity to express our different beliefs, to hold those different beliefs, but to coexist together. And one of the tools we talked about, so where can we go if that's where we're at? Like, how do we not slip into this? Like, okay, we got to fight Christian nationalism. I'm like, yeah, because the end game of that is not to debunk the belief system of Christians.
Right.
The end game is to say there are some limitations, and what you're advocating for is actually the erasure or eradication of other beliefs. You're actually advocating for assimilation.
You're proselytizing.
Not coexistence, not something that honors difference and different beliefs that all human beings have, and also I believe have a right to. So when we think about this, one of the things that's been a helpful tool is I always like to provide, like, hey, I've made plenty of mistakes on this. and even had discussions that probably modeled debate on this rather than how do we coexist. And one of the tools I found really helpful is the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, right? And especially when we talk about education, children's rights, which is the Convention on the Right of the Child, which is a subset of human rights. When we talk about those human rights, often center them, even before I teach democracy, like what are the core values of democracy? What are all the ways that democracy organizes as decision-making for diverse people to coexist? Before we even get to all of that, right? I talk about this Universal Declaration of Human Rights, this ongoing commitment that diverse people around the world have, right? And I say, study these. Let's look at them. Let's talk about them. Pick a few. Talk about where you see them in action, where you see them honored and where you see them not honored. And then let's specifically talk about children's rights as a subset of those. Let's learn those. Let's see where we see those honored, where those are practiced in ways that support the right of children to exist as human beings in our community, to learn, to grow, to be cared for, right? And then when we talk about that, I said, now hold space for all of the different value systems that help you make sense of who you are and how you got here, right? Your origin stories, your moral frameworks, all of the different ways, whether you're Muslim, whether you're Buddhist, whether you're agnostic, whether you're Christian, whether you're Jewish, whether we all have systems of understanding our origins and teachings and lessons that help us make sense of the decisions and the actions we make together in community. So I've opened that up now to say, like, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights holds space for people to have those different belief systems, and then talk about, hey, you have those belief systems. Now, as human beings, we have great capacity in all those systems to support one another. Also, we have great capacity to do harm to ourselves and to one another. How do we practice the former rather than the latter? How do we practice our great capacity to help one another, to coexist, and to disagree on things and still have things be okay? And you know what I found, Tim, is that Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and especially the rights on the Convention of the Child, hold space for multiple perspectives on our origins, so diverse religions. And I think that's beautifully what public schools ought to be doing. There is no official belief system of the public schools in a democracy. But if I need one, I would say it's the Universal Declaration on Human Rights, and especially centering the rights of the Convention on the Rights of the Child. And that holds space for all the belief systems to say, hey, there's some boundaries when we come together. And that then I feel like honors that people can be different. They can come from different belief systems and coexist in peace. Right. And the goal then isn't to debate which of those are real, which of those are correct, which of those are right, which of those are best, but to converge on being our best every day.
Man,
being our best every day.
Lupinacci right there. Talk about it. Yeah. Yeah. Snap, snap, snap. Just some beautiful words there. Talking about, you know, yeah, Johnny, I mean, you're making me go like, but could we mandate what you just said be where we go? And then we run into a whole, you know, whole other thing. Mandating can't be doing that. Hey, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. What a week. Great 4th of July celebrations, 5th of July. Hoping everybody's going to just now chill out on the weekend, sit back, relax. Hey, and come back, join Busted Pencils.
It might have Monday. A brew from Minocqua Brewing Company. If they get a chance, check out minocquabrewingcompany.com. See where you can get progressive beer. Listen to Busted Pencils. Tune into Civic Media. Tim, it's a rocking week. See y'all next week.
You're listening to Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up in the show, we'll talk to the Humane Handling Institute about different ways to raise and slaughter our animals. Interesting discussion. Hope you'll join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 11.
Introducing the new Sushi Lover Madison. Indulge in all-you-can-eat sushi or hibachi at an amazing price. Now open at Westtown Mall for lunch or dinner. Experience stunning decor with a beautiful water fountain, captivating oriental artwork, and a welcoming atmosphere. Their skilled chefs create each sushi roll fresh and made to order. Visit today at 72 Westtown Mall and satisfy your cravings. For menus and a full list of locations, visit SushiLoverWI.com.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. You're listening to Mad Radio.
WMDX 1580 AM Columbus. W224 EG Madison.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.